Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I am your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. My co-host for the program is Stone Payton, a vital cog at Business Radio X with his own show, High Velocity Radio. Good morning, Stone.
Well, good morning, Dr. Tim. Thanks for having me, man. What do you think about the new digs?
I wondered if you were going to raise that. We are in a new location this morning.
Yeah, this place is bustling. We're at Rome, Atlanta on Windward Parkway. This is our new location for our Alpharetta studio, and I think it rocks.
Well, I'm thinking I'm like Good Morning America or the Today Show because we've got this glass wall that nobody's there right now. But I'm sure they're going to stand and be waving and all that kind of stuff.
That's right. It's going to be just like like you say, the Today Show or Good Morning America. They'll be rubbernecking and knocking on the glass and stuff. That's going to be fun.
We hope so. We hope so. But well, it is.
What about this weekend, though? You got some cool stuff happening this weekend, too.
We do. This weekend is the Decatur Book Festival in Decatur, Georgia, of course. It's on the square in Decatur. It's the largest independent book fair in the country, draws about 70,000 people. My company, which sponsors the show, Right Choice Services, has a booth there, and Business Radio X, Right Here, Right Now, is doing a remote all day Saturday.
That's right. We got to unplug all this stuff. No, I'm just kidding. We actually have a
you
remote
have,
unit.
Yeah.
And we'll be out there.
You have that stuff. And we're going to set up in the Right Choice Services booth, and we're going to be interviewing people all day long Saturday. Some people have already signed up for slots, but there are a lot of openings, so people can come by and say, hey, I want to be interviewed. They can see us up live, close, and personal. Oh, that's scary.
Now, and where is this thing? How do we get to it?
Find your way to the square in Decatur is the best way I can say. I mean, it is literally on the square in Decatur. It's sponsored by the AJC and DeKalb Medical. You can find information on it. If you go to DecaturBookFestival.com, you can get all the information. We're going to be at sort of like the intersection of some of the various vendors and booths. There is a gazebo on the square, the actual square, and our booth is just off from that. Or if you find BookLogic's booth, which is one of the major vendors for the event, we're going to be right beside BookLogic's because Ahmad Meraji, the owner of BookLogic's, has been a guest on this show. He likes me, and we can be beside
him.
Can
you say his name 5 times real fast?
Yeah, I could, but I'm not going to. So, well, do you think we ought to move on beyond Tim and Stone show today?
Do we even need guests? Can't we just come and have a good time?
We probably could do that, but better not today.
All right.
Well, our regular and consistent quality blogging is a great way to promote one's business, and the blogs can become the foundation for a book, which will further promote one's business. And Dr. Tim Langley, a chiropractor, blogs to share stories of success, improvement, and reestablishment of health within his clients. Once we begin writing in earnest, and certainly when we publish, writers need to be alert to copyright laws and to protect their intellectual property. So Charles Forlitas from the Miller & Martin Law Firm keeps this show's sponsor, Right Choice Services, on the right path on these issues as well. And those are our guests today. We're going to go with our usual format of interviewing each one individually and then open up for conversation. So let's begin with the other Dr. Tim. Isn't it nice to be the other one?
You're supposed to be the other one.
I know that, but you're on my turf today. Our other Dr. Tim is Dr. Tim Langley. He has 10 years in banking, followed by 10 years in real estate, and now 10 years in counting as a chiropractor. He practices in East Cobb, Georgia. I've read his blog, and I describe Dr. Tim's style as country doctor with keen insight. How do you like that?
Well,
there's a good start.
I don't know how to take that, but I'll take it as a compliment.
Well, I intend it as such because you and I have talked about this. When you blog, I get the feeling that you're trying to sound like you're sitting at the kitchen table with the people, having a cup of coffee, talking about their health issues and giving them insight.
Absolutely. You know, I way too many times we're accustomed to doctors talking down to us, mm-hmm. And talking at us. And I'd rather have a conversation with folks and put forth ideas from their standpoint,
sure.
Not necessarily mine. I became a chiropractor late in life, because of some things that affected me very mm-hmm. significantly. And so if I can talk to folks on a one-on-one basis, mm-hmm. On a real basis, mm-hmm. Then I feel like I have a much better chance of telling my story and reaching them.
Well, that certainly comes out in your blogging. What got you started blogging anyway?
You know, there was a couple that you and I both know several years ago, and they were talking about getting seen on the internet mm-hmm. And increasing your exposure for your business. And they talked about writing articles, mm-hmm. writing blogs, just putting content out on the internet. And so I've always liked expressing myself. I've always been a bit of an exhibitionist, so it was a way for me to show out, show up, just be out there. And so, it's you write a little page at a time, mm-hmm. keep it simple, stupid kind of stuff. And blogging was just a natural extension for me.
Well, how do you determine the topics? Because you've been at this for quite some time, haven't you?
I have. You know, I'm one of those crazy chiropractors that think that we're internally guided or spiritually guided or what have you. And so when I hear the little voice, when I have a prompting, when I have an idea, I sit down and I take out my pen and put those thoughts on paper. Mm-hmm. So I wish I could say that it was programmed and that I had a special way of approaching it every single time.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of when the spirit moves me, I sit down and do something with it, whether it's do a video or write an article for the blog or.
Mm-hmm. So you don't have a set schedule in terms of a new one every week, or do you?
I don't. I try to do something on a weekly basis, mm-hmm. at least a weekly basis. But a lot of times I'll go 2 or 3 weeks without writing something, and then I'll write 3 or 4 things in a single week. So I just try to be internally guided, and when it hits me, then I write.
Do you get feedback from people who read the blogs?
Oh, yeah.
He's smiling. You can't see that.
I get the sense that it's not all positive.
Well, you know, it's so funny. I'm not a back pain chiropractor. I'm a lifestyle chiropractor, and I help folks with seizures and chronic health problems and that sort of thing. And I have a bit of an attitude about the chiropractic profession. So I get a lot of hate mail from chiropractors, oddly enough.
Oh, you do?
And I get a lot of fan mail, so to speak, from people who are suffering from chronic health problems,
mm-hmm.
who've run into a dead end in the traditional approaches mm-hmm. that they've tried. So it's cool. I get the great feedback, I guess, from people who want to know about a different way,
mm-hmm.
and not so good feedback from people who want to maintain the status quo.
I understand that one. So what's your most recent blog? What was the topic? I should have looked before I came
in. You should know this.
I should know that, but my excuse is I was on vacation. This is my first act of work.
Lately, I've been, my practice is a little different. You know, mine is called the membership practice.
Mm-hmm.
And in my practice, we don't take insurance. We don't do Medicare. We have what's called a membership. And so when you join my practice, it's for the same reason that you join a health club.
Mm-hmm.
You intend to go on a regular basis because it makes you feel better, work better, and live better. So I've been blogging on that. And, you know, it's funny. There are a lot of chiropractors who are fed up with the traditional way of doing business. So, you know, they'll respond to that. And then there are a lot of folks who would love to have chiropractic from the same perspective that I offer it, but they just can't find it when you go out into the market. A lot of what you see is fee for service.
Sure.
So I've been blogging a little bit, actually a lot lately on that concept.
Well, you had a blog recently on a young child, a 2-year-old. Is that triggering anything? Or you talk about one of the earliest clients you ever had.
You know, you mentioned that I've got a past that includes being a banker and a real mm-hmm. estate broker. Mm-hmm. So my education was in business. I had an economics degree, but I had hurt myself playing football in high school, and I'd suffered for 20 years, and eventually met a chiropractor and got married to that chiropractor.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't that the way you met a chiropractor and you married the chiropractor?
Right. And, you know, my back problem that I suffered with for 20 years had gone away. But when I started my real estate company, we also started her practice. And in her practice was a little girl that had sort of stumbled in with her babysitter and her family. And that child had suffered seizures for her entire life. And she was 8 or 9 years old at that point. And her doctors had told her mom that she ought to just institutionalize the child so that mom could go live a normal life and the child could be taken care of professionally. And that little girl, you know, who had been suffering 15 to 20 grand mal seizures a day, taking 10 to 15 narcotic grade drugs every day, had no more seizures, no more problems. And I guess had it just been for that little girl, I would have still been in real estate. But we ended up on a skiing trip with some other chiropractors, and they told us a story of a child about a year and a half old that was suffering seizures. And they this chiropractic couple asked to have the child brought in to be evaluated for see if there was a chiropractic problem. All the doctors, the pediatrician, the neurologist, the neurosurgeon, not only said no, but hell no. You can't take that child to a chiropractor.
Mm-hmm.
And that little child was, again, suffering seizures on a regular basis. And instead of getting chiropractic adjustments and seeing if there was a problem, ended up having a procedure called a hemispherectomy.
Ooh.
And
that sounds that serious.
That just means half out.
Mm-hmm.
Half the brain removed. And I, at the time that I was hearing the story, my little boy, my firstborn child, was about 15 months old. And all I could see was my beautiful child with his head cut open, his skull opened up, and half of his brain being removed. And so I sat in the back of that car, just tears streaming down my face. And I swore to God that I would spend the rest of my life letting people know that before they subjected their child or a family member to something like that, that there might be another way.
Another way to go.
So, you know, and I tell that story. I think it's important for folks to know why you do what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as much about the money, although I love making money.
Don't we all? Don't we all?
It's really, I don't. If someone's child doesn't have to have half their brain removed, then I'd like to help them realize that.
And fix them along the way.
Well, you know, sometimes it's not as much about fixing as it is just about removing an interference and how we live our lives.
The interference and letting the creative spirit with which we're imbued go to work.
Absolutely.
Do you check with your clients? If you think you're going to be writing about them in a blog, do you get their permission? And it's okay to answer even though we have an attorney sitting beside you?
Yeah. Did you see the attorney perk up when you asked that question?
No comment.
You know, I probably need to sit down and talk with Charles, but I never mention anyone by name.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that.
And I try to make sure that when I discuss a situation, it's the situation more so than the person.
Yeah.
So I don't know that the person that I'm talking about would know that it's them.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been times when I've wanted to write something specific that I've asked them if it would be all right.
And I'm sure they say yes.
Well, you know what? If your intentions are pure, and people trust you, they give you, you know, they give you a lot of leeway.
Now, you and I have had this conversation over Chinese food several times, but now we're over the airwaves. Are you hoping to make a book out of your blogs or a book in particular?
You know, Tim, there are lots of books that I want to write. You know, I'd love to write. One of the things that you talk about is writing your life story.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I necessarily want to reveal my whole life, but there's something there. And and I would also like for people to understand this perspective that I have, not necessarily on chiropractic, although that's one area, but on living a whole life and, you know, not being squeezed into a box, not being regimented, not having to march lockstep with everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, I I believe that we were made to be creative beings,
mm-hmm.
capable of, I guess, leaping tall buildings in a single bound, faster than a locomotive, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a book that I'd like to read, write, mm-hmm. and read.
And read. Well, you'd have to write it, but yeah. You and I have known each other for about 4 years, and you do have those ideas and those concepts and the excitement. Quickly, or not so quickly, but I'd prefer quickly, how did you get from banking into real estate?
You know, it's funny. When I came out of the service, mm-hmm. We were in another recession, mm-hmm. and I had interviewed for jobs, and there were very few jobs available. I had an aunt that worked for a bank. She introduced me to the head of personnel at that time, and he hired me as a teller. And then I worked into their training program and became a banker. I loved the banking because it stimulated my senses in terms of crunching numbers and mm-hmm. playing with that sort of stuff, but also dealing with people. There's something about me that has always enjoyed helping people. It took me 10 years to realize that that's not necessarily what the banking business was all about.
Imagine that.
10 years in three banks, and I finally realized that a bank is a bank is a bank.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, somewhere around that ninth or tenth year, had met some real estate brokers in a branch or in a building where the bank had a branch.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just kicking butt and taking names, making tons of money, having a blast. And they said, you know what? You could make a lot more money if you work the hours and the way mm-hmm. you do. Or you could make the same money and work 2 or 3 days a week. Well, there was an independent streak inside me. And so that just appealed to me. And I ended up getting into commercial real estate. Stayed there until the next recession. Got into residential real estate, and then met this gorgeous chiropractor at the gym, and, you know.
The rest is history.
The rest is history.
What I liked was the word you used with banking, crunching numbers. Now you crunch bodies.
Well,
I don't really
crunch.
Yeah. Well, I want to move on to our next guest, but how do people contact you, Tim? Do you have a email address, website? What's the best way for people to be in touch with you?
I'm all over the internet. You could find me at langley-chiropractic.com. You could just Google Marietta Chiropractor. That would come up. You can find me on Facebook, Dr. Tim Langley. So, you know, if you just type in Tim Langley Marietta, that'll show up, or Marietta Chiropractor on Google, that'll show up.
Well, great. Well, I hope you'll be willing to sit around while I now interview Charles. He's been so patient with you.
He has been, hasn't
that
he?
That kind of puts you on the spot, doesn't it?
I don't know. He's been writing down a lot of stuff, so I wonder if Dr.
Not
Tim's not.
Yeah, I have some personal questions for Dr. Tim later.
We'll get to that. Well, we've got Charles Forlitas. He concentrates his practice in the areas of trademarks, patents, copyrights, and intellectual property litigation. He also works with clients in the areas of franchising, distribution, and franchise distribution litigation. Mr. Forlitas has assisted in the administration of trademarks, patent, prosecution, and intellectual property litigation for well-known name brands owned by public and private national and international companies. And he's even done work for Right Choice Services. That's got to be right up at the top.
I have. No, I mean, when you're working with somebody who believes that the mark is really important to them,
yes,
it does, you get more personally invested as opposed to a client with a portfolio of 270 trademarks and it's just, you know, okay, here's the one today. What do we do
today? Yeah. Well, I like that. I'm glad you're here with us today. So let's begin with this. Should writers be concerned about intellectual property rights?
The answer is absolutely yes.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who creates an original work, mm-hmm. and when I use work, that's a copyright law term. It's anything that somebody creates, be it textual or music or sculptural paintings. It also encompasses sound recordings, plays. So everything can be a work.
Mm-hmm.
It does have to have some originality. And generally, you can't get a copyright for things like just the name of a word or mm-hmm. a short phrase. Those are more the subject of trademark.
Okay.
But absolutely, yes, any author should be using the copyright notice on their, you know, the masthead page of their book. And, well, when you write anything,
mm-hmm.
you have copyrights in what you create right off the bat from its creation. Most people think, oh, I need to register it. That's not necessarily true, but there are great advantages to registering a copyright.
Could you run that through or by us again? Because that's something I run into when I'm working with clients. They will often say, well, I got to get my stuff copyrighted. And I said, you've written it. It's copyrighted.
Right. Most people don't understand that the copyrights are inherent in the work of authorship. So as soon as you create your work, whatever mm-hmm. it may be, you own copyrights in it. The way that you tell people that you have copyrights in this is by using the copyright notice, which is a very formulaic, statutorily created display of the Circle C, which everybody's probably seen and is familiar with,
mm-hmm.
the year of publication, if or creation, depending on whether it's published or not, and mm-hmm. that's another issue, and then the name of the owner of the work. And if it's you individually, it's your name. If it's you as an employee of a company, that could be the company's name. It just depends on what your job is. So, you know, you always want to use the copyright notice. It puts people on notice that what they're looking at is a copywritten work and helps you in proof if you ever have to try to sue somebody for infringement.
Well, is there an advantage to registering it, and what is that?
The principal advantage for registering your copyright is to avail yourself of statutory damages as opposed to having to prove actual damages. So when you have a registered mark, the advantage is being able to take at least $750,000 to $30,000 of statutory damage per work that's infringed, as opposed to having to put on proof that, well, I sell each work for $10 and my cost going into it were $8, so per unit I lost $2. So there's a big difference there, $750 minimum versus $2 per copy.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, so the range, $750,000 to $30,000, sure. is at the discretion of the judge,
mm-hmm.
but then if it's a willful infringement, if somebody's knocking you off or ripping you off intentionally, those statutory damages can go up to $150,000 per work.
Wow.
And so you've probably seen the recent case about the woman who was downloading music and, you know, using one of those services mm-hmm. that allowed people to upload music from her. And she fought it, and she got hit personally for a judgment of several $1 million.
Oh,
ouch.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Now, they have appealed at some, you know, she's mm-hmm. got a public interest lawyer trying to defend her because she still denies, well, I didn't do it. You know, well,
somebody did.
Yeah, somebody did, and they're using your computer. But so, you know, those kinds of, I mean, it's a big disincentive to try to
sure.
To copyright. I mean,
well, how do you register a copyright?
Copyright registration is a very simple process. There are forms available online, and in fact, the fees are lower if you register your copyright through the Copyright Office.
Okay.
It's the Copyright Office, I think, .gov.
Okay.
Or copyright.gov. It's a simple form. You have to fill it out. You do have to submit a copy of your work, which you don't get back.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one of the tricks, and then pay the fee. And literally, that's it. For that reason, the fee online is $35 for most kinds of works. To do it on paper, you can print out the form and mail it in,
mm-hmm.
The fee is $65 now. And those, you know, go up periodically. But generally, I don't file many copyrights for people because it's not cost effective for me to do it for people.
I understand. Or for them, actually.
Yeah, or for them. I mean, honestly, at my rate, they're silly to use me to register a copyright unless we're getting ready to litigate. One of the other advantages or requirements to sue somebody for copyright infringement is having registered your work. Now, you don't have to register it, but before you bring a suit on it, you do register it. Huh. And that is done all the time. Somebody says, well, they just registered their copyright before they sued me. Well, they had to, and there's nothing unusual about that.
Well, good. So, that's helpful to know, really. Yeah. Now, what is, excuse me, what is intellectual property, and how does that differ from copyright, or doesn't it?
Well, there, intellectual property is any kind of an intangible property right that is created either statutorily, usually, but it generally has to do with creation of ideas and works, mm-hmm. or capital value that isn't embodied in a tangible widget. So there are various different kinds of intellectual property, but the primary types are copyright, patents, and trademarks. And just the thumbnail difference between those, patents protect the idea behind, you know, an improved invention,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to you cannot copyright an idea. You can copyright your description of that idea. So if I write down, I have this great idea for, you know, solving world hunger, and mm-hmm. you write it down, you can copyright your embodiment, your description of it. But if it was a process that had certain steps, then you could patent that.
Okay.
And then if you called this the, you know, feed the world, that's a terrible trademark, by the way, but if that was your product name, if you had a product or, mm-hmm. you know, it was a package that you ship off and they can just plant stuff, then the name of that would be a trademark. And a trademark is, you know, the thing that identifies the product. You don't want it to be a descriptive term for the product, but Right Choice Services, you know, mm-hmm. consulting services.
Okay. Yeah.
An easy characterization of what you do.
Sure.
Or educational services.
Mm-hmm.
So the differences in those also go to their duration. A patent, the idea behind patent law is to generate new ideas and to get them out into the public domain as quickly as possible. And so a patent has a definite term of 20 years. And then after that, anybody can use it. So after 20 years, this is in the public, we can do it. A copyright generally has a different term based on whether it's a owned by an individual,
mm-hmm.
in which case the term is the life of that individual plus 70 years. Or if the owner is a company, then it's 95 years or 120 in certain circumstances. It depends on when it was published.
So I need to put in my will that my boys inherit my copyrights.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
Well, generally, intellectual property would be part of your residual estate.
Sure.
So it would pass without
okay.
being expressly.
We'll make that note.
Yeah.
All right. Got it.
Sorry.
He's going to bill you for that. You know that, right?
No, yes. No. Yeah.
I don't do trust in estates. Well, similarly, I don't do HIPAA, which Dr. Tim was talking about earlier, the privacy stuff.
Talk to me about, and our listeners, to what is fair use? That's something that comes up.
Well, people think, oh, it's on the internet. I can just copy it and use it. Well, that's not necessarily true, especially with photographs or songs and those kinds of ideas. There is a affirmative defense that's statutorily created that says, you know, certain types of uses are, and it's kind of a misleading, fair is what it's called, is a fair use. It's misleading because something can seem really fair, but it's not a fair use under the law.
It can be really illegal. Huh?
Right, right. I mean, so it seems fair for me to download that song and play it just at my house, but technically that is not necessarily a
fair use.
Yeah, a fair use. Especially if you're then allowing other people to upload it and create other copies.
Mm-hmm.
The easiest way to think about it is, if whatever you're doing, is that going to affect the market for that person's copyrighted work?
Okay.
So if you are a business and you take a subscription to a publication, and then I get it in-house and I make 20 copies of it and distribute it to all my partners, that, you know, I should be buying 20 subscriptions mm-hmm. instead of 20 copies, and then I'm wholesale copying it and distributing it out. That's a copyright violation, even though it seems pretty fair. I sure. took the subscription, but it's not. As opposed to the statutory, and I actually wrote them down so I would have them, you can use small portions of other people's works for criticism, comment, news, teaching, scholarship, and research. So those are the kinds of the natures of the use that are deemed fair. So you can put an excerpt from somebody's book in something that you're writing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You shouldn't copy, you know, the whole thing and then put an introduction on it and say, by Dr. Tim.
That would not be fair use. Yeah.
Well, yeah. But I mean, there have actually been cases about that where they essentially copied the entire book and, you know, made little changes to it and then said, you know, well, I changed some stuff, that's mine. But the copyrights that you have are the right, in my work, I have the right to copy it, to distribute it, and to make derivative works, mm-hmm. among other things. And a derivative work is anything that's based on my original work. So I just read an article about a new show that's coming out on ABC this year that is a fairy tale type of show, and they have characters that are Snow White.
Okay.
And I was wondering, gosh, did they have to get anybody's permission to do that? Because, you know, there have been Snow White movies before. Mm-hmm. But I think the ultimate, I don't know if it was created by Disney or not, but if it was an old time, like a Grimm's fairy tale,
mm-hmm.
those are in the public domain, and so you could play with those. But I don't know the answer to that.
That's a good example,
but I bet
though.
they looked at it for sure.
Well, business people and entrepreneurs retain attorneys for their business matters. Could those same attorneys capably handle IP or intellectual property and copyright?
It depends on what their area of practice is. Okay. I would generally recommend somebody familiar with intellectual property to review intellectual property-related mm-hmm. contracts.
Mm-hmm.
For our firm's big business deals, I'll generally review the intellectual property sections of a 90-page, you know, merger mm-hmm. agreement or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But for a, you know, single book publishing kind of a deal or an entertainment contract, you probably do want to use an attorney that has some experience in those areas, especially with copyrights, because there are all kinds of, you think of a copyright as just a way you can't copy it. But the reproduction rights and the distribution rights, you can sell them or retain them individually.
Mm-hmm.
So I can give you the right to distribute my book in the U.S., and I can give the other Dr. Tim the right to distribute my book in Mexico. And, I mean, copyrights do generally have international protections by treaty, so mm-hmm. it is different from country to country.
So it can get pretty particularized.
But, yeah, I mean, you can, if you think of a bundle of rights,
mm-hmm.
you can, you know, and just a sheaf of wheat.
Slice them off.
I can give that one to you. I can give that one to Alan. I can give that one to Stone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those rights are individually allocable.
Okay. Well, I've got to say, I want to put in a plug for Miller & Martin because right. you are with that firm and you guys have represented me in getting my copyright and my intellectual property. And Tim Silvis is the one that I communicate more often with, but I know I'm going to wind up on your desk eventually.
Yep.
And it is just so satisfying to know that if I have a question, I can shoot you an email and I get an answer and I can feel safe with that.
Well, I appreciate that, and we appreciate that. Tim is in our corporate section, mm-hmm. and he handles more business formation type of things. And my practice is generally in intellectual property and then specifically patents, trademarks, copyrights, and then franchising, which is kind of a offshoot of a fancy trademark and IP license.
And see, that's what works well, because Tim handles the business stuff for Right Choice, and you're there for my books and my trademarks and all that stuff. Yep. Well, people want to be in contact with you, Charles. How should they do that?
My direct dial is on the internet, or it's 404-962-6444. You know, voicemail and email are the easiest ways to get me. My email is cforlidas, C-F-O-R-L-I-D-A-S, at millermartin.com. We're on the web. millermartin.com is our website, and you can find everybody's contact information through that as well.
Well, I'm going to throw it open. Tim, do you have questions for Charles? Charles, I think you've got one for Tim. I think you wrote something down.
I did, and it was more of a personal question. You know, is there a type of bed that is better for your back than not? I mean, it's a personal question.
That's, you know what, that's a great question. And crazy chiropractors like me say the best kind of bed for you is the one that you're most comfortable in. So, you know, for some people, it's going to be one of these air mattresses. For some people, it's going to be like a Posturepedic type thing. For some people, just a traditional mattress is going to work. I would say, you know, just test, try them all out.
Well, how do you try them? I mean, that's the thing. You don't know it until you slept on it.
Well, you become one of those commercials, you know. They take a make a movie of you sleeping on the bed in the store.
Well, you know, Clark Howard addresses that by finding a motel that has the kind of bed you want to sleep on. Hmm. Martin, my wife and I just came back from vacation, and we stayed at a hotel where we could have a sleep number bed.
How was that?
Well, she had a softer number, and I had the higher number, and it worked out really well. She was comfortable. We both slept well. And I don't know that I would want to go out and buy one, but that's but seriously, that's one way to do it. Yeah.
I mean, we got one of these mattresses with the fancy pillow top on it.
Oh, yeah.
And my back started hurting after that. I mean, it's also coincides with me getting a lot heavier, but... but I just have never liked it. You sink into it, and I've always fancied myself kind of a harder mattress person. But the purchasing decision was not mine.
You know, I think what Tim suggested is a great idea. If you're going to go out of town, check with some of these hotels and find out what kind of beds they have and try that. Or, you know, you and your wife might just enjoy going to different hotels each weekend and trying out the beds.
Yeah. I'll float that idea.
Yeah. We need to go. You got anything you want to learn about?
Yeah, I do. You mentioned registering your copyright.
Yep.
Now, is that a one-time thing? Because I've got like 250 blog articles and 100 or so videos. Do I register my copyright once?
Well, that is precisely why a lot of people don't register everything, because theoretically each of those blog entries and each one of those videos is independently copyrightable and independently registrable. And at $35 a piece plus the, you know, hour to fill out the form, you would spend all of your time doing that. My recommendation is if you're actually going to sell, you know, if you know you're going to have a distribution of the work, then it is a good idea to go ahead and register it. If it's software, any actual release of the program, you know, if it's the beta, maybe not, but once you release it and go live, and then every, you know, real update after that, not just a few little tinkers, can and should be registered, especially if it's a computer program that can be downloaded. Mm-hmm. Now, there is a kind of a specialized thing if you're willing to do a collective of all of your blogs. I mean, you could put all of your blogs in a single copywritten collection, but they would have to be identified by the collective title. And that way, now the filing fee is more like $100, $150 for that. But that would allow you to register, you know, all of your blogs to date.
Sounds like a book to me, and I know a writing coach that would love to help.
You had mentioned just that one time.
Oh, so that's right, I did, didn't I? You didn't know that Charles and I were going to one to you on this one, did you?
No, but you know, sometimes you know, a Southerners need a 2x4.
Yeah, but that is one way to go, don't you think, Charles?
Well, oh, certainly. I mean, you can organize anything into a book, but to Dr. Tim's point, each one of those blogs is already a copyrightable work.
Absolutely.
And then the act of putting them together into a book, he is creating a new copyright work or copywritten work, but it is also a derivative work of each of those things that went before.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, you can copyright yourself to pieces just by filing and filing and filing. The best strategy is always use the copyright notice. And that way, I mean, it should be on your website. It should be in anything that you actually publish or post. You know, it can be just a header that automatically gets incorporated into your display. Sorry.
Boy, that's a great point.
Let's say, all right, brain fart.
Lost it there.
Well,
huh?
the ownership of it, if you're operating under your company, I mean, do you blog as you individually or do you blog as, you know, Landry Chiropractic?
Individually.
Okay, because then your name individually would be the, you know, the owner of the copyright. Kind of brings up the one issue I didn't really touch on is what is a work made for hire versus an original piece of ownership.
Mm-hmm.
If Landry Chiropractic hired you to be their blogger, then it's part of your duties for the company, and the company would be the entity that rightfully owns that.
Okay.
And so instead of you being, you know, Dr. Tim, it would be Landry Chiropractic.
So let's say that I WordPress host my blog.
Okay.
And I haven't yet registered my copyright. Does WordPress own the copyright to that material, or is it still mine?
Is that a publisher, WordPress?
No, it's just a hosting.
No, site. You are the owner of your copywritten work.
Okay.
And you probably have some agreement with them through which you post, you know, your works on theirs. But you should still, you know, with the title of it, you know, today's chiropractic lesson, you know, copyright Dr. Landry.
Okay.
Well, my friends, the clock is on us. We welcome your comments and suggestions about content and our guests. And if you would like to recommend a guest or be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Simply send us an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Stone, for co-hosting and getting us underway on our first day in the new studio.
Hey, thank you, man. This has been a lot of fun.
Great, great. And I want to say thanks to our guests, Dr. Tim Langley and Charles Forlitas. Dr. Tim, your contact information again.
Easiest way is either email drtim02@yahoo.com or by phone 770-509-4805, or you can just find me at Marietta Chiropractor on Google.
Okay. And Charles, your contact information?
It's millermartin.com, or my email is cforlidas, F-O-R-L-I-D-A-S, at millermartin.com.
Great. Well, Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. Learn more about Right Choice Services at www.choiceservices.com. I hope you will join us next week and tell your friends about the show. In fact, send them an email right now to invite them to listen live or to the downloads. Right Here, Right Now broadcasts live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. at righthererightnow.businessradiox.com, and the MP3 version is available later today. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business, right here, right now.